This is the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the mouth,
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
All right, my guest this week, recording from his office in Los Angeles, the home of the LA Times.
Well, it's a vacant office.
You can let me get to you first.
It's a vacant office.
I haven't introduced you yet.
I don't want to put it out there like, oh, I've got some new job and some new office.
Well, you do have a new job, Dan Wojcicki from the LA Times. You are the newly minted national NBA writer, coming over from the old Charger beat after years on the Clipper beat before that.
I fought for LA and I lost. So now I've moved off the NFL.
Yes. I'm but done. Now you're a new national guy there. How about that?
I'm super excited. I think, you know, even before like the wheels for this were put in motion prior to LeBron coming, and I was excited about, you know, sort of the direction of basketball in the city again. I thought the Lakers had a fun roster. I think the Clippers like going through this sort of like half rebuild, half not was interesting. And then like, you know, the league's in such a good place. There's so many fun teams to talk about. Then, you know, I think like a couple days after I agreed to do it, or they agreed to let me do it or whatever, LeBron happens, and then it's like all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, so things are going to be a little different now.
I mean, they're going to be good because you can be the national NBA guy and just write LeBron stories. And you'd probably make your editors pretty happy.
Yeah, I think they'd enjoy that. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have a lot of people writing a lot of LeBron stories.
You don't want to write about the Orlando Magic rebuild? You don't want to take a 4-day trip down to the Magic Kingdom to...
Oh, I hate going to Orlando. Like, I tend to find the good in every city that we get to travel to. Like, we're lucky enough to get to do these things. Orlando is probably my least favorite travel into town because of the, you have to deal with the Disney people. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, families, like, how dare you have so many children and want to take them on a nice vacation and somehow get them all TSA pre-check. Like, that kid is not pre-check. You know, he's trying to take his shoes off. It's like, dude, you're six. Like, just go through the line. Like, why do you have so much metal on you?
I really thought this through. Orlando.
Okay. Terrible.
All right. You and I were both at Laker Media Day. A couple hundred people at the practice facility today.
Yeah.
As you would expect, national, local alike, everybody there to see LeBron James make his first public appearance as an LA Laker. He did the thing with Rachel Nichols over the summer when he opened up his school. But this was the first time everybody kind of got a crack at him. And let me just ask you first, your general takeaways from LeBron, because he was asked in about a 15-minute kind of, you know, Q&A session. He was asked about the decision to come to LA. He was asked about all the things he has going off the court. He was asked about Rajon Rondo. What was your takeaway from LeBron?
I mean, he didn't seem that thrilled to be there. You know, I mean, it was very businesslike, very... wasn't going out of his way to engage with anybody, wasn't trying to connect necessarily. You know, and not that he needs to do these things. I mean, he's LeBron James. I mean, I think everybody kind of knows what he can do, but it seemed like kind of a necessary formality for him just to get through. And then, you know, I think as the season goes on, obviously he'll get to know people better and there'll be a better relationship. But I think he looked weird in Lakers uniform. There's some adjustment to that. I mean, did you think Rondo looked stranger as a Boston person?
No, I mean, Rondo has been around a little bit.
He mentioned when he listed the teams that he was on, I had completely forgotten he was on the Sacramento Kings.
He led the NBA in assists that season.
Like, that one was like, oh yeah, he was on the Kings. Like, I mean, I knew the Mavericks. I remember that briefly too. But yeah, so we've seen him. I mean, it's still always a little jarring when you see kind of, you know, a superstar wearing like kind of, you know, something different. There wasn't the Miami Heat bravado though, certainly. I think, to me, the biggest takeaway of everything he said was that success isn't measured by championships, which to me struck me as a very un-LeBron thing to do because, you know, he's willed so many, you know, sort of good, definitely flawed basketball teams to get to that championship level. To me, that not being a top priority, or not making it seem like it was a number one priority, that growth and patience and these things were important, seemed to me a little strange, but I guess you don't sign with the Lakers if you think you're walking in the door and gonna, you know, compete with the Warriors, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, he was asked specifically for this season, something along the lines of what your definition of success is, given this team is not probably not going to win a championship. And I give LeBron credit for, you know, not saying something ridiculous like we still believe we can win. We go out every day thinking we're going to win a championship.
30 teams think they're going to win a championship.
That's absurd. And whoever asked, I think it was an international reporter that asked, like, how do you think you match up with Golden State? Like, come on. This is not what they're trying to do this year. I mean, down the line, absolutely. LeBron is still focused on catching Michael, on winning more championships. Sure. But he knows, and I give him credit because he knows what this team is. However you may see them, whether they're top four seed, bottom eight seed, out of the playoffs, whatever, they're not a championship team out there. So, Dan, I give him credit for, you know, just telling the truth. He's going to make headlines for what he said, you know. When the headline will be success not dependent on championship, colon, James.
Yeah.
But it's a fact.
Wait,
of life.
Were you a copy editor here? Are you going to take a night shift today?
I need another job. So okay, I need.
Yeah, you don't have enough of them.
I need another job.
No, I mean, I think that's certainly part of it. But I mean, it's also, I think, kind of hearing what we all assumed when he signed, which was like, this is a multi-year plan, which is strange for somebody who has been so year in, year out. A force, you know, I mean, he's defined a conference for a decade, you know, pretty much. And to, you know, to not envision him there at the end is going to be different. To envision him kind of taking more of this long read on the NBA and the Western Conference is certainly different. And I think it's going to take some getting used to, because hearing something like that is jarring, you know, from him, because you're so used to, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, believed he could beat the greatest team in NBA history, you know, those 70 plus win Warriors teams, and did it. You know, him and Kyrie Irving, like, they did it. And that took a lot of bravado, a lot of guts, a lot of self-belief. Obviously, he has tons of that. I mean, he said today, it's like, you know, what defines pressure to him at this point? Nothing. But there is pressure here. There's pressure to win in LA. I mean, like, if you're gonna walk in the footsteps of Magic Johnson, Kobe Bryant, you know, those levels of kind of icons in the city. Like, if he comes out of this without a title, I'll define it for him. It's hard to say that this run would be a success then. I mean, I feel like they have to win here once, and you know, but it's just not all on him, obviously. They need to build a better roster, and they need to develop the guys that they have here.
Yeah, and they don't have that roster right now. We know the score. Most everyone has one-year deals. This is a roster that they're going to try a bunch of things with Luke Walton.
It's a bridge year for sure.
Yeah, Luke Walton said he wasn't wed to any rotations yet. He hasn't thought that much ahead. And it's clear that, you know, these first days of training camp, they're going to learn a lot about what Luke Walton wants from this team in terms of style of play.
I mean, yeah, I think it's interesting, right? Like, they want to play fast. I mean, that's, everybody says this, right? This is like,
when you're not good, you want to play fast. That's a general rule of thumb.
But even in like your media day, like bingo cards that you have out, right? Like, the coaches that say, you know, we're going to walk the ball up the court. We're going to use 7 to 8 seconds to get it. Nobody ever says it. Everybody wants to play with pace and with thrust. These are things that, you know, these are the buzzwords. I don't know. Can podcast people see me rolling my eyes while I do this?
No. Play with thrust? Is that a thing?
This was Rob Pelinka yesterday. They want to play with, or earlier this week, they want to play with thrust.
That's the first time for somebody saying
really?
They want to play with thrust.
That's a thing. I've heard that. That's a football thing too.
Okay. Maybe
that's, it's like pace with, it's like pace times force equals thrust.
So football, basketball, and
same
porn. Basically,
looking her over my shoulders now for my bosses. I'm not going to be able to have internet privileges here anymore if you say that word.
Let me say this though. One thing that needs to be dispelled and stop talked about is the whole off the court juggling everything distraction for LeBron James. People need to understand that LeBron James is not doing Space Jam 2 because he's a Laker. LeBron James doesn't have The Shop because he's a Laker. LeBron James doesn't have the new series Shut Up and Dribble on Showtime because he's a Laker. His people, Maverick Carter and his Spring Hill Entertainment Group, have been pitching this stuff for months and years. This is all a long time in the making. Now, Dan, there may be stuff down the line that comes from LA.
That's what I was just going to say is that, I mean, I think, like, you know, this isn't the crest of the wave, right? You know,
but it's not like he's out there like looking at raw footage and
editing. Well, I mean, I think we have to. Yeah, I mean, right? Like, you hire people to do this stuff for you. I mean, right? Like, you want to put your fingerprints on it, I suppose, to a certain extent. I don't know. I haven't produced many films. It is not something that's not on my resume.
The Wakey Chronicles.
Right.
Coming soon to YouTube.
Speaking of thrust, I think, you know, it's to me. I think it's obviously. It's a piece in the overall puzzle as to why he's here. I do think so. I think there's no question that, you know, everything being the same, you know, if Hollywood was located in rural Montana, you know what I mean? I don't think that'd be the only, I don't think he'd be playing for like the Bozeman, you know, whoever, or I can't think of any other cities in Montana. I pissed off Florida and Montana already.
Seriously.
I'm really taking this national thing to heart. But I do think, obviously, it's part of LA. It's part of the charm here. It's part of the appeal. And he's going to take advantage of it. I think he's certainly someone who's shown the savvy to, when presented with opportunities, to take advantage of them and use them to either push social agendas or to position himself for things down the line. Like, he's been smart about that. And I think the fact that he's a Laker, I think it just allows the momentum from these other things to build, right? Like, and I do think that's how it impacts sort of, you know, the fact that in the last few weeks we've had he's had a bunch of shows ordered and stuff like that. I think it's like up to 10 projects or something right now, like under the Spring Hill umbrella. And like, you're right, he's not writing scripts for all of these. He's not sitting there, you know, like you said, looking at raw footage or holding the clapboard or any of that stuff. Like, that's not, he's a basketball player. And especially this first year in LA, it's going to be very basketball oriented, I think. But there, we were talking about this at lunch, there is something to being famous in LA. Like, it's just this like inception level of fame, right? Like, where you're already, when you're famous among the most famous, you know, and this happens in New York too, to a certain extent. Like, I think it does open doors that wouldn't be open to him if he was in Cleveland. Like, the fact that he's here every night, the fact that, you know, he can roll out of bed and meet with the most powerful people in Hollywood, it's going to allow him to do more different things. And I think at a certain point, like, is there a breaking point where it's too much? Possibly. I mean, I think it's possible, but I have a hard time, you know, believing, just as much as I have a hard time believing that he doesn't think championships are a level of success, that he would let things get in the way of basketball. To me, this felt more like family and lifestyle than it did, you know, basketball necessarily, or entertainment. It felt like it's just a great place to live, and, you know, there's a lot of reasons to live here.
All right, let's drill down on a couple of things that LeBron will have to deal with on the court. I mean, besides James and how he fits into LA and all that stuff, the most interesting subplot with the Lakers to me is the point guard position, because you've got Lonzo Ball, the incumbent, coming off a credible rookie season. As much buffoonery as around Lonzo, I mean, wait, 35 minutes a game in, what, 52 games last year? He was pretty good. He's clearly not the player Jason Tatum is, who he's going to be compared to, but he's
Donovan Mitchell.
But look, he's not a bust. He's certainly not a bust.
No.
But they have Lonzo, and they go out and they bring in Rajon Rondo. Rajon Rondo, who since his rookie year has started all but two games in the NBA. Both these guys, Dan, said the right things at Media Day. But one thing I find interesting about Rondo, when I asked him straight out, I said, Rondo, like I'm his best friend. I said, Rajon, when you're, you know, you have
Is
been,
Rondo the shorthand? Is that what his best friends call him?
I think they probably do. Yeah, it's Rondo. Yeah, like, Paul Pierce calls him Rondo.
Not like Ray Rowe or something like that? Or?
Never heard that before in my life. Okay. But you say, Rajon, you have started all these games. You are coming off a brilliant postseason with New Orleans. If you're not a starter, I mean, how important is starting to you? And look, one thing he did say was, you know, maybe I'll start 15 games, sit eight. I'm not sure how that's going to work, because, you know, with New Orleans, you could play Rondo and Jrue Holiday together. Here, I don't see any scenario where you can play, or too many scenarios where you're playing Rondo and Lonzo together.
Well, and two, you know, I mean, and I think the start 15, sit eight, too, is probably a little optimistic, because they invested all of 1 year in Rajon Rondo, and they have a lot more invested, obviously, in Lonzo Ball. And I do think that this is kind of, it's a short-term marriage, right? Like, this is like that college relationship that you know is going to end badly at some point, but you want to get the most out of it, right, while it's there, while it lasts. And I think I'm with you. I'm a Lonzo Ball fan. I think his rookie season is, like, because so many other rookies did, like, incredible stuff, I think he lived up to some expectations, in the sense that I'm a fan of players who are elite at things, right? Like, who have the boxes they check and say, like, this is something. And we know Lonzo Ball is an elite rebounder, and that is going to, as a guard, he's as good as anybody, you know, and that's going to be something, I think, as he gets bigger and stronger, only going to be better at. And I think we feel the same way about him as a passer too. You know, he's a really selfless player, and those two things, I think, make teams better. And I think pair actually really well with LeBron James. You know, as a guy who can, you know, if LeBron doesn't want to run, Lonzo will. But, you know, you also kind of worry about his growth and how much floor time is he going to see? Because to me, I think when you have LeBron James, this is going to be interesting for Luke Walton, the Lakers, all year. The, you know, on one hand, they've had this sort of push, like they're developing players. This is a long-term view, you know, years in the making to get these guys. They're all young. They're, you know, 20 years old, 21 years old guys, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, like our kids, right? And to get them up to speed. Well, to me, and to at least to a certain degree, like that time is gone now. Like you have 4 years of LeBron James under contract, like four cracks at winning a title. And we already agree that this year is probably already a punt. So you got to get him up to speed fast. And so this mentorship has to work. I mean, like there's not a lot of room for them to kind of not figure things out, or for Luke Walton to have pressure to win games and be like, well, you know, I'd feel better with Rajon on the court than I would with Lonzo. Because 2 years from now, that's not going to do any good. Mm-hmm. And so I think they're going to have these kind of conflicting things, and it'll be really interesting to see how he handles if the choices are Lonzo, particularly if he even feels like he deserves to be out on the court. I think that's when real problems could kind of surface.
Well, agreed. And along those lines, I wonder how much influence LeBron James has on all this, because, you know, if they get into fourth quarters and Rondo's on the bench and they don't close in fourth quarters, you heard LeBron gushing over Rondo. LeBron was in Cleveland when Rondo was kicking his ass with the Celtics all those years. He knows the IQ that Rondo has. He knows how well he plays.
I think he called him one of the smartest players he's ever played.
I mean, everybody calls him that. I mean, it's uncanny how the level of respect that players have for Rajon Rondo. Does LeBron say, look, I want that guy out there on the floor. I want the smart guy. He may not be the more naturally talented anymore, but I want the smart guy out there on the floor. And then what happens?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, we have there's conflicting interests, right? And that's where LeBron's patience, which was something that kind of came up a couple different times today, is going to be tested this year. I mean, that's, to me, one of the stories I'm most interested in seeing is, like, can LeBron be patient? Because we've seen this guy before when put into these difficult situations, you know, like, it wasn't very patient with their roster last year. Obviously, that team underwent massive changes. You know, there's been stuff like things said on Instagram and, like, different little hints here in the media and things that he said. Is he going to have that same level of, or a different level, a newfound level of kind of, well, they're young guys, they're going to learn? I mean, today he said the right things about that, but we'll see when, you know, when they're 5-12, you know what I mean? And Lonzo Ball is, you know, shooting 28% from three, if he feels that way still, or if he doesn't like Brandon Ingram's shot selection, or doesn't feel like he's tough enough on defense, you know, is he gonna push for Lance Stephenson to be on the court? You know, the guys that he knows. I think, to me, that's what's so interesting about this roster and this team, is that this is a test. I mean, I didn't ask LeBron James a question today. It was a total madhouse over there. It wasn't worth it. But, you know, if I was gonna ask a question to me, I mean, was that part of the appeal, to test yourself in this totally new way, which is that surround me with a bunch of 22-year-olds and a bunch of 32-year-olds and, like, let's see if I can make this all work. It's like, you know, because that's something he's never had to do in his career. And I'm really curious to see the results. I think that situation you pointed out with, like, late in games, who's going to be on the court, particularly at that point guard position, and it might come down to, honestly, I mean, we both know how LeBron plays. It might come down to who's better off the ball in those situations. And I think that's probably going to be an edge to Lonzo. I think at UCLA, he was a little more off the ball than people realized, did a lot more. A lot of his assists came, I think, more in transition and stuff like that. And actually, you know, shot the ball fairly decent in college, I think, off the ball. And he's put in a lot of work on that front this summer, even though he's been hurt. To me, that's where he can make his biggest impact and kind of earn LeBron's trust late in games. Will be as a guy who's a secondary player who, once LeBron drives, maybe it's a secondary drive and a pass in the lane. Maybe it's a quick swing pass. You know, or, and the Lakers will help this, or it's knocking down a big shot when it's presented. I mean, I feel like he can do those things that Rondo does too, but he doesn't see the game the same way. And he certainly at this point doesn't communicate it the same way.
Look, I used the word combustible this summer to describe the Lakers. And I think that little corner of the locker room is the most, because if it is Rondo playing the minutes, maybe Lonzo doesn't say anything, but LeVar might. And we haven't heard much from LeVar over the last few months. I saw Bill Simmons postured that that perhaps he was on the payroll now.
Silence is being bought.
Yes. Wouldn't be the first time. I've seen it happen in other sports.
It's a very Hollywood theory. Mm-hmm. Certainly possible. I mean, I think, you know, but Lonzo mentioned this today, and I do think that this is also sort of the I don't want to say the silver lining of getting LeBron James. I mean, that has its own, you know, every color lining. You know, you've got LeBron James, your life is measurably better as a basketball team. But one of the things it does is it takes less attention to Lonzo Ball. Like, that's not a name we've heard a ton about. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you saw the way the crowds thinned out today. you know, the way everybody was so hanging on every word LeBron James said. There were no seats available. Cameras are shoulder to shoulder. LeBron gets up and walks. Half the room walks with him, you know. And now all of a sudden Lonzo Ball can sit down and talk about his jump shot. And there aren't as many people that are listening. And there's a little more. I do think the shadow of LeBron James could really benefit a young player like that who came in with tons of attention. Not all of it good, obviously. And I think that's something that another thing that I'm really looking for this looking forward to seeing this season is what does Lonzo Ball look like when it's not under the guise of like being a big baller or whatever else, you know, when he's not a brand, when he's just like a complimentary piece on a team that's trying to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me ask you about Luke Walton, because I mean, again, he's a guy that is under a lot of pressure this year, I firmly believe. I thought he did a pretty good job last year, especially navigating some of the turbulence that happened with Lonzo, with LeVar.
And when that stuff happened, they performed well. Like, I think that speaks to, I think, the way that the team feels about Luke. I mean, you know, when I think the, not to go off, but when I was around the team a little bit after LeVar had said that Luke had lost the locker room or something, I think they went on a pretty decent winning streak and played like some of their best basketball of the year. To me, I think that speaks to the overall respect for him. But yeah, you're right. There is a lot of pressure. I mean, you have LeBron James as your coach. Like, there's going to be pressure. And I think Rob Pelinka, Magic Johnson, late last week, did their best to kind of try to say, we know this, and he's our guy. We're backing him. It's, you know, but again, if you're 5-12, 17 games in the season, or if you're 10 games under 500 before the All-Star break or at the trade deadline, you know, do you make a move? I think it's certainly possible. I think, you know, again, you're committed to 4 years of LeBron James. You only have so many chances. You don't want to go down the roads with people that, if it's not going to work. I tend to think he's a good coach. I think he did a really good job with that team last year, got that team playing defense, which if you'd seen them before was not a strength necessarily of that team. I think he obviously helped develop Julius Randle and push the right buttons with him over the course of the season. You know, they did a really good job with Kyle Kuzma, and I think Brandon Ingram got better as the year went along. And to me, the one guy that we never talk about when we talk about the Lakers, and maybe, I mean, this is favored is a weird word, but the guy that I think could impact a good team the most is Josh Hart, a guy that I think is a versatile, super important modern NBA wing who can kind of do a little bit of everything. You know, they did a really good job with those guys, I think, last year, and have developed them enough to put them in a position where you can put them next to LeBron James and feel that they've got a credible shot at the playoffs. I know maybe you don't feel that way, but, you know, I think they've got enough of those young pieces to whether it's ship them off in a trade and bring in that other superstar if things go badly, or, you know, I think Luke has put together a good enough base. But that's the huge elephant in the room is, like, you know, you don't have a lot of time. 4 years isn't that long.
Of course, they have a credible shot at the playoffs. It's just, I think, you know, given the West and how many wins it's going to take to get there, I think it's asking a lot, even with LeBron James on your team, to get to that threshold, since it's just as strong, if not stronger, than what it was last year. My question with Luke, though, is, I mean, what does he have to do? I mean, winning cures all. If they're the fourth seed in the Western Conference, he keeps his job. But if they miss the playoffs, I go back to the same stuff. Magic didn't hire him. Pelinka didn't hire him. Mm-hmm. And what we know about LeBron James, he absolutely tried to push Eric Spoelstra out in Miami his first year. David Blatt, after winning the Eastern Conference and having a well above 500 record in that second year, was pushed out in part because LeBron wanted somebody else on that job. It's almost an impossible situation for Luke Walton to be in. He looked like he was giddy about it today. I wonder what he looks like 2 months from now when we're around Christmas time.
Well, I mean, I think this is it speaks to a lot of these guys, is it changes everybody's timeline, right? That Luke Walton is still a young coach in this league, a guy who's getting better. You know, had the really weird situation at the start of his kind of head coaching career in Golden State, where he was gifted this amazing roster and did a tremendous job. You know, I'm not a person who thinks that anybody could just, like, that a paper bag could have coached the Warriors that season. Like, no, like, I think you need to manage those egos, and I think he did a good job of that, and there has to be a figurehead, right? But I think his timeline in terms of growing of a coach has been elevated. I think Lonzo Ball's timeline is, in terms of learning how to be a credible shooter, has shrunk. It's got to get there faster. Same with Brandon Ingram getting stronger, and all of these things have to move quicker now. And you're right. There's immense pressure on him because he's much more replaceable than Lonzo Ball or Brandon Ingram or Kyle Kuzma. You know, that's one of those things that it's kind of the first thing to go. And I think you're right. Like, they've said that he has, you know, their full support. I know Jeannie Buss thinks very highly of him. I think they appreciate the job that he's done in his time so far with the Lakers. He's family here. Obviously, has been someone who is a part of their community, a part of their fabric, and they like that. But how much is that going to matter if LeBron doesn't? And I think, you know, you asked, what does he have to do? I think he has to, it's an unenviable job. He has to keep LeBron patient. And you know, knowing that all of these things are moving quickly and stuff like that, keep him kind of focused on that long view that he talked about today, if they're not in position, you know, to kind of make a run right now. We'll see. They were a team that snuck up on teams, I think, at times last year. They played harder than people thought. They were in a lot of games and didn't close at the end. It's easy to say, well, we got LeBron James now, those problems will be solved. I think there'll be a little bit of a different attacking mindset from teams that come through Staples Center, you know, or from when the Lakers come to town. But there's a lot of pressure on him for sure. It wouldn't stun me if he's not the coach next year. It wouldn't stun me if they get off to a bad start and he's scapegoated this year. I don't think it's necessarily fair either way. But when you get LeBron James, I mean, he called it a tremendous opportunity today, and it is. It's a chance. I mean, you have the best player in the world. You know what I mean? That's a huge chance as a head coach. It also comes, though, with giant stakes, right? Mm-hmm. And there's less room for error.
Support for the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. Let's talk about buying a home. It can be one of the most important purchases that you'll ever make. But today's fluctuating interest rates can leave you with unexpected higher payments, which can turn a great experience into an anxious one. That's why Quicken Loans created their power buying process. Here's how it works. They check your income, assets, and credit to give you a verified approval. This gives you the strength of a cash buyer, making your offer more attractive to sellers. Once verified, you qualify for their exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock your interest rate up for 90 days while you shop for your new home. Then, once you find the one, if rates have gone up, your rate stays the same. But if rates have gone down, you get to keep that new lower rate. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Mannix. That's rocketmortgage.com/Mannix. Rate shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030. All right, let's move over to Jimmy Butler, who was not at the Timberwolves media day.
I was hoping he'd just show up somewhere.
Yeah,
today, right?
And do something, some kind of media anywhere. Who knows? Or, you know, but whatever. Jimmy Butler, 29 years old, one of the better two-way guards in the league, has a year left on his contract. He wants out of Minnesota. I've heard different things about why. It sure seems like the Andrew Wiggins relationship sucked. I mean, that was... You saw the Wiggins family kind of getting involved with on social media about that. Butler has a list of three teams. It's the Clippers, it's the Knicks, and the Nets. From what I'm told, the Wolves aren't even looking at that list. Like, you want Jimmy Butler, make us an offer. We'll deal you. They have no allegiance or desire to appease Jimmy Butler. And there have been other teams coming in making significant offers to go and get him. What do you make of that whole situation, which seems like it has pitted Tom Thibodeau, the coach and the president, against Glenn Taylor, the owner? Tibbs seems like he's in favor of riding this thing out, trying to make it work, at the very least trying to win this year with Jimmy Butler, and perhaps dare him to leave money on the table next summer, whereas Glenn Taylor doesn't seem like he has the appetite to go through a turbulent season like this.
Well, I mean, I think, again, this is another example you can file this under, probably why having a head coach be in charge of your long-term basketball decisions is probably not a great idea, because you said it right there. Their best chance to win this season, their best chance to make the playoffs this season, is if Jimmy Butler is on the court. Like, he's good enough to get them into the playoffs, right? Or at least keep them in the conversation. If he's not on the team, depending on what the return is, you know, we keep looking for teams to fall out of the West, out of the top eight, as, you know, teams like Denver's coming, you know, the Lakers are the obvious one. Like, who's going to be in the playoff race that wasn't in it last year? The Clippers maybe sneaking up on people with a deep roster. Minnesota's a candidate to not be in the playoffs next year, right? And if he's going to leave anyways, you know what I mean? I tend to side with ownership in these situations. Like, if a guy's going to leave, and if you know he's going to leave, try to max. Now, you would ideally, this wouldn't be a public auction. You know, that limits sort of like the assets you're able to get in return, and who knows exactly what they're asking for. But I do think that in this case, this is just when you hear things like, we want to keep winning now, we don't want to trade him to a Western Conference team because that means it'll be harder for us to make the playoffs right now. Well, like, if the roster is what it is, that's still a young enough roster to kind of undergo a little bit of a retooling. Like, they don't need to be the 8 seed. Now, one of the things is, and I've talked to some evaluators that aren't crazy about this upcoming draft, that don't feel it's as deep as the drafts have been the last 2 years. So that, you know, the incentive to tank right now or to keep the 13th pick versus making the playoffs and even getting that playoff revenue, like, there's not as much incentive maybe to bottom out right now. But when I look at Minnesota, again, that's a team that I don't see a super clear pathway for them to get to that upper echelon in the Western Conference as is. A trade certainly would be one way they could gather a couple new assets. Maybe they get a couple contracts off of their books that they want to shed, and they can become players. I don't think they'll ever be a top tier free agency destination. It's too cold.
Yeah, I mean, look, getting Towns' name on the 5-year, $190 million contract at least gives you, you know, two cornerstone players. Towns, I think, no argument, legitimate franchise player. Wiggins, separate conversation. He really didn't.
Yeah, that doesn't much. Really feel like a cornerstone. I mean, no. To me, that he feels like kind of the free agent they might be able to sign and overpay at some point, right? Yeah. It's like when those kind of guys hit the market. I think the other thing, too, that's really interesting about Jimmy Butler, and I wrote about this last week, is sort of this tier of superstar, right? Like I think I use the term sort of stars. Like, he's a superstar for sure. But no, like, this class of guys that are going to get max contracts, that's what Jimmy Butler wants, is like the 5-year, $190 million max, right? And I don't know that you can win a title paying him that kind of money. Especially a guy that's going to be into his mid-30s with the Tibbs minutes on him, who's at best an average three-point shooter, a terrific defender, no question, but a guy who it's hard to project him being better than he is right now. I think the mileage on him, those feel like hard minutes that he's played. You know, we know what Tibbs does at practice too, and how he wears those guys down. I think for a team like the Clippers, for instance, right, a team that does have two max slots, like, they have to be asking themselves real questions about, and I mean, I know teams are doing this, you know, can he be our number two? And I think for other teams that are like the Miami Heat, for instance, where he'd be down there as their number one. Now they're in a unique situation because of their cap. They're so handcuffed. This is the only way they can really get anybody, is that they can go trade for somebody. But, you know, I don't know how you feel about him as a player. I mean, I think he's a borderline all NBA player. But a guy, though, again, at 29, I compared him a little bit to Blake Griffin and when I looked at their numbers, their all NBA appearances, their all-star appearances, they're all kind of right in line with each other. Blake has had the more catastrophic injuries. But, you know, both guys are pretty sure about to miss at least 15 games every year.
Yeah. With anybody, when you get to guys at this stage, you're at some point during their big contract,
you're going to be overpaying them.
You're going to be paying for past performance. Yes. You're going to be giving them money that they don't deserve at that point. The key is getting enough years out of that before you get to that point. Like, I thought Boston has gotten a lot out of Al Horford. I mean, they're going to be paying Al Horford at the end of this deal a lot of money, but Al Horford had arguably his most complete year last year. It was huge for them in the playoffs. Jimmy Butler, do you get through 2 years of a new max deal before you're like, oh man, this guy is really an albatross around our neck? Now, I think he's a terrific player, but he's been injury prone. He's been battling injuries three of the last 4 years, I believe. Well, and last year,
the question is, how well do perimeter defenders age, right? I mean, that's
not well.
That's certainly a position that you need a base level of athleticism in the current NBA. I wish he shot it like 38% from three instead of 34%. Like, I mean, these are little things, but like when we're nitpicking, but when I think you're talking about a guy being, you know, the second piece to a title or something like that, because I think, you know, teams like, especially a team like the Clippers that just blew it up because they didn't have a title contender, right? Like their pathway to a title did not exist. This is a team that very much still wants to win an NBA championship, right? So where does Jimmy Butler fit into that? You know, does a team built around Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler get you there? Can that team compete with the Warriors? I'd say probably on paper, no. I don't think so. I think that you need that second guy has got to be just a tick higher, just a level up. You know, doesn't have to necessarily be that Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Steph Curry level of superstar, but that second tier of guys, I think that's where you need to live. You need to find two of those guys if that's the path you're taking. And if you talk yourself into Butler, to me, part of that is because you just don't have other options.
One thing I wonder, and look, we'll learn a lot as when Butler finally comes, you know, either gets traded or comes back to the team. But, you know, why wasn't this handled 3 or 4 months ago? 3 or 4 months ago, the Wolves could have spent the offseason like the Pacers did with Paul George, like the Spurs did with Kawhi Leonard, and dealt with it. We're now into training camp, and this just surfaced as a trade demand a couple of days ago. Did they not know about it back in? You knew there were some issues.
I think I
there.
Read something where he had been voicing unhappiness for a few months.
I mean, I've read a lot of that too. Like, I've heard a lot of that.
And like maybe, like again, when your coach is your decision maker. You know, that's something like, oh, we'll figure it out. That's my Tibbs impression.
But if they're at the point where they have a sense of urgency to deal him in the coming days, and that's what it seems like, they want to move off this. It's ownership.
It feels like it could happen before like we're done taping this,
It absolutely could. They're not going to get the best possible offer. Think about it. Look at what Paul George fetched a year ago. We didn't know what Victor Oladipo was at that point. Victor Oladipo was a serviceable third or fourth option. We didn't know he was going to turn to the most improved player in the NBA or one of at that point. So it was, and no draft pick was involved in that deal. Kawhi Leonard was traded for DeMar DeRozan, a guy I think Toronto might have been trying to move off of anyway, just to move off of that contract and go into a full rebuild, which is still something on the minds of the Raptors. Now, what are you going to get for Butler? You can certainly argue that Kawhi, more valuable than Butler. Paul George, more valuable than Butler. Is the offer really going to be any better? I mean, Miami can't offer you draft picks. The Clippers and Nets and Knicks aren't going to get into a bidding war over this guy, not when they have the cap space to sign him outright this summer.
Yeah, I mean, I think like, you know, to me, it's a situation is like maybe you can get an asset out of this if you're Minnesota, but you might be taking on a contract that you don't love in the short term either. Like it's not like a clean break here doesn't seem like this doesn't feel like a trade where everybody's going to come out of this happy, right? Like this
isn't that a reason? Isn't that like reason to tell him to show up and to play? I mean, unless you get an offer that blows you away, a young piece that you can add to this group, show up, play, maybe you figure it out. You're right. If Butler goes, the Timberwolves could be one of those teams that slips out of the playoff mix. If Butler stays, they're a conference finalist candidate. I believe it. Look, before Butler got hurt, where were they? They were right there in that 4-5 type of mix. You give the young players another year to develop. Maybe they get a little bit better. Houston took a step back. Utah, I think, will take a step forward. But the Blazers, I mean, they're a candidate to be right there in the conference finals.
I mean, I think I tend to look at sort of some of their dysfunction as a reason why I don't think they'd be making that step forward. I know some of that is with the beauty of kind of knowing stuff now that happened last year, and you know you read like Jamal Crawford said some stuff, you know, obviously Jimmy Butler's unhappy. We've seen kind of I've never seen a contract subtweet quite the way like the Karl Towns contract subtweets, you know what I mean, and some of his statements, like it's not a good situation over there, at least that's how it reads from afar when you see the way this conference is kind of shaken out, and when you kind of start listing teams in your mind, which is something I've had to do here recently for our preview section. You know, one of the fun things you get to do when you walk into a job like mine right now is like, oh great, now go predict the order of finish for the entire league. You know, and you start looking about who's going to fall out of the Western Conference picture. To me, Minnesota is more of a candidate to do that than they are to contend in the finals. I think that one of the things we know more is that, you know, Tibbs hasn't been at the helm of a contender in a while. You know, I think that roster isn't as good as it needs to be. They haven't brought in any young talent. You know, like, you know, they traded the Justin Patton's out again for another season. That pick is pretty much lost at this point. You know, they haven't, who have been their free agent acquisitions?
Nothing really.
Yeah. Nothing
significant.
Nothing significant. Right. So to me, they're a team that didn't get much better. They're counting on Karl Towns getting better, which he will. And they're counting on Andrew Wiggins getting better, which he might. You know, and I think obviously when you add in the fact that Jimmy Butler is clearly unhappy and doesn't want to be there, and you're right, they could force him, I suppose, right? Or they could fine him every day, and you could kind of leverage him that way. But it's a lose-lose situation for them right now. There's no good way out of this. They're going to end up not getting as much for him as he's probably worth. But again, like I kind of hinted at before, his market is confusing to me to begin with. I think in some ways he's almost more attractive as a rental. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like for a team like if Houston can figure something out, you know what I mean? Or a team that just, you know, Philadelphia. Like to me, those teams, he may even make more sense in sort of that, like, we're going to have you for a year. We're going to try to win a title. And then we're not going to give you that max than he does for a team that's looking at him as, we're going to want this guy to be a face of our franchise for the next 5 years.
Mm. All right. From one team that could slide out of the playoffs to maybe another, the Pelicans, you know, they made some interesting moves this offseason. They let DeMarcus Cousins walk, which I understand. They had a lot of success last year with Nikola Mirotic as the four man alongside Anthony Davis at the five. It seems like they developed chemistry, and Cousins, the Achilles injury, comes down to money too. How much money do you want to spend on DeMarcus
Cousins? And you're betting on someone coming back from injuries that big men have traditionally struggled coming back.
Really struggle with. At the same time, they also let Rajon Rondo walk, effectively swapped out Rondo for Julius Randle with the Lakers. Now the news this week, Anthony Davis fires his agent. He goes over to Clutch Sports. Rich Paul is his agent. Rich Paul is also LeBron James's agent. LeBron James had a lot of guys that are represented by Clutch Sports play for him in the past. With the Lakers, you already have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope there. What did you make of Anthony Davis's, not his decision to switch agents, it happens all the time, but to go to LeBron's agent?
I mean, I don't know if I was supposed to see this, but I happened to see the Lakers media day schedule for 2020, and it said future Rich Paul client at 1:30 p.m. right after LeBron. We don't know who that will be yet. It's a mystery. Maybe Tristan Thompson. But no, it you know, obviously that's the first thing you think is like, you know, Anthony Davis is going to be a Laker. Is like the first to me, and this was always sort of the pie in the sky, like my weird, crazy. I've already had bar arguments about this even before I was covering the NBA again. And this is just completely wild speculation. But like to me, that would be a guy like, if you want to shove all your assets to the table and say like, we want to get another star here, like that's the guy you do. That guy is Warriors. Like the Warriors have no answer for someone like that. I feel like, you know, pairing him with a player like LeBron James would be. Has anybody used the term Lob City before? I feel like there would be a lot of lobs. There would be elements of that. And this just kind of gives that total weird like fantasy thing just a little bit of life, right? And it's another thing that, I mean, it's hard to imagine a player of his ilk re-signing in New Orleans when you see kind of what the crowds are like at their games, you know, during the regular season. I don't know how it is for you, but like when I've gone through there, you know, in the past, I don't know if it changed last year, but you know, 2 years ago going through there on the Clippers, you'd go in there and it would be, you know, 60% full and stuff. And it's a great city. There's a lot to do there, which is probably why it's not as crowded. and it's hard to imagine that he would spend his prime in a situation where he's, you know, clawing to be the seventh seed every year.
Which I found, I mean, look, that's why I found the decision to let Rondo walk so perplexing. Now, I understand it for some degree. I mean, Rondo, for all his magic in the playoffs, the regular season, he's a grab bag, really. Like, some days he plays great, but you know, you get to a mid-December game against Orlando and you might lose
Rondo. Again with Orlando.
The Magic aren't going to be good, so we won't be talking about all that much.
They're not a sponsor on the pod?
They are not. We are not sponsored by the Orlando Magic. However, I get that part of it, but this guy was magic last year in the playoffs.
Orlando Magic.
He was spectacular in the playoffs last year. I mean, he dominated, you know, two high-level point guards in Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum in the first round. They didn't get out of the second round, but they were trending in a positive way with that group. That's why it surprised me that they'd let a player of that caliber walk to replace him with an Elfrid Payton, really. And I guess you move Holiday back to the one, but you know, you had some good things there and they let it go.
Well, and I mean, and that's their path. That's like their one pathway, right? To keep Anthony Davis is you have to get to championship level. Like that's really, I mean, you have to be in that mix to convince him to stay. Otherwise it's, you know, in the modern NBA, it's hard. You know, when rookies go to these markets that aren't, and people say that market size doesn't matter. And like, look, like a guy like Russell Westbrook has proven that you can keep a guy in a smaller market for X amount of years, but that feels more of an exception than a rule to me.
It's not just the exception. It's that Westbrook also, I mean, if Westbrook didn't have that infrastructure there of Sam Presti and, you know, now Billy Donovan, like, but mostly Presti, like, if he didn't know that he had some of the smartest people in the world backing him there. I think,
I mean, he has like the right personality for it too. Like, I think there's a lot of things that kind of go into having someone, you know, who has literally can take a map of the United States and say, like, I want to work and live anywhere I want for as, I mean, the money's going to be the same anywhere pretty much. You know, I mean, you leave money on the table to leave, but you get that back somehow, you know, whether it's through taxes or endorsements or however. You're not going to go hungry if you don't take that Supermax. But I do think like a team like New Orleans is in at a real disadvantage right now, because you have to build the kind of culture, and there isn't really a culture there. You have to build, and like you said, you were starting to see some of those signs late in the season, I think, as they kind of push for a playoff spot, and then also obviously in the first round, where I don't know how you felt. I was not surprised by that result, as someone kind of wasn't covering the league last year, just kind of watching it. Like, that felt like a series, and they had the best player, you know, and that's one of those easy kind of old playoff rules, right? You go with the team that has the best player, and a lot of, against a lot of teams, they're going to have the best player. But I just don't see tremendous long-term future for him there, and I think that's generally when people don't think that too, is a time sometimes when people change agents. You know, I don't think you need to change agents necessarily if you're just going to sign the Supermax deal they're going to throw in front of you. You know, what are you negotiating?
Well, I mean, one thing he does need is, I think he needs to be involved in more endorsements. I think he's too good a player to not be even more visible. I mean, he's, I don't know where you rank among the NBA best, but he's up there inside the top five, I would imagine, of NBA players, top 10 at worst.
Yeah, at worst.
In that group. And I don't know, he's visible in some degrees. Red Bull does that stuff, but I think he needs to be more visible.
Didn't he have like a eyebrow thing? Like
he did, yeah. It was a Red Bull thing when it was, he faked off doing the whole eyebrow thing. But look, here's the thing. I don't know, if I'm a Pelicans fan, I don't panic necessarily because he signed with Rich Paul.
I mean, we have like, what, we're still talking like two, 3 years out, right?
Yeah, I mean, 2020, at the end of that season, he can get out of, opt out of his contract, I believe. And players make their own decisions. I mean, look, I'm sure there were people in Paul George's camp that would love it if he was playing in LA, but Paul George, the player, was comfortable with Oklahoma City and comfortable with Russell Westbrook. That's why he stayed. From the Lakers context, though, to spin it back there, I don't know that they can win a bidding war with some of these teams to go and get him. I just don't think there's enough.
Well, so much depends on development, right? And stuff like, I mean, like Kuzma's an interesting piece because in some ways it sort of found money, right? At the end of the first round, you get a guy who has one of the more prolific rookie seasons in Laker history. Well, I mean, he looks terrific. You see, you know, you saw him today. We'll do a little muscle watch here for the people, like, best shape of his life, Chris. I don't know if you've ever heard that before.
Another bingo.
Yeah, right? But no, looks really good, right? And I think, obviously, we don't know what Lonzo Ball is yet. We don't know what Brandon Ingram is yet. And I think those are interesting pieces. Now, obviously, depending on what Boston wants to make available, they have the best treasure chest, right? Like, because they have, I mean, they have Jason Tatum, you know, who I don't think they're trading virtually in any circumstance.
No, I think you're looking at, if it's Boston, it's Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, and some collection of draft picks.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, but Jaylen Brown's a great piece. Like,
he's an all-star caliber player. Yeah, he probably will be an all-star.
I mean, but like, you know, and then I think depending on how heavy, and now the weird thing is sort of like, you know, in my mind, it's like, oh, you just have the Lakers, like you push all your assets in today. You call New Orleans, say, the writing's on the wall. You know, he's signing with Rich Paul. Like, he's not going to be there very long. We'll give you Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, and Brandon Ingram. We'll make this work. You know, we'll get them off your hands. And it's like, congratulations, New Orleans. You've just become last year's Lakers. All of a sudden, it's like you just have the same team that was here.
Rap battle in New Orleans.
Yeah, you know. So that's not very realistic either. But so, like, you need to see those guys, I think, develop a little more before the Lakers have the ammunition to get this done in a trade. But it's interesting as we see players exert more power, you know, about their destinations. I think as teams have, you know, seen that you can't let these guys go for nothing. That is a lose-lose proposition for you, that it's better to, you know, like what Glenn Taylor's thinking right now is like, let's just get something, you know, to help push us forward a little bit. And maybe that something can turn into something else down the line. You know, these are the little moves behind the scenes in the NBA that get people like us talking and say, like, I know when I saw it, I was like, that crazy theory I had was like, all of a sudden I was like, well, maybe I was a little right.
All right, let me finish with Boston. And
that's weird, out of character for you.
To finish with Boston.
Well, I do the Celtics.
Let's take you home.
Let's take me home. The Celtics, Warriors, and Lakers are just going to be the storylines all season long in the NBA. But the
not
Celtics,
a lot of Hawks talk.
Not a lot of Hawks talk now. Unless Trae Young looks like Steph Curry, then we can have
a little Hawk talk.
Okay. Celtics had their media day today, and we got a first look at Death Lineup 2.0, as I called it, with Al Horford the five, and they took that picture, Tatum, Brown, Kyrie, Gordon Hayward. That's a potent offensive line.
Can we talk about that picture for a second?
Sure.
What I like to imagine happening, and I don't think this happens, but like I like to imagine like Terry Rozier like kind of walking over, you know, he's like, I want to take a picture with my guys here, like get all of us. And like the photographer being like, well, Terry, we only have room for five in this shot. You know, like the picture the Lakers tweeted out today had four guys on it.
Yes.
Like no center. It was LeBron, Kuzma, Lonzo, and Ingram. Like I find these like the picture hierarchies to be really interesting.
Well, I like the Marcus Morris in Boston coined the phrase bench with attitude. BWA is what they're calling the Celtics bench.
Okay.
Because they all have a little bit of a chip. You know, Terry Rozier was a starter. Whoever it is, Jaylen Brown may come off the bench at some point if Aaron Baines starts. Anyway, Kyrie Irving had an interview this week with Jackie McMullen where, and I'm sure he said something comparable at Media Day, but he thinks that this Celtic team can beat the Warriors. Now, you got to walk before you crawl, in my opinion, and this is a team that is young players, has never been to the finals. In fact, only Kyrie Irving and Aaron Baines from this group has finals experience. It'd be a major step forward if they win the Eastern Conference. But if they get there against Golden State, as it looks right now on paper and what we know about the Warriors, do you give them any shot?
Yeah, I mean, I think on paper matchup, certainly. I mean, I think this is what teams that are in the position to contend have been doing, is to try to figure out these lineups that you can throw out there when the Warriors play Draymond Green at center. Because, you know, for multiple seasons now, nobody's really had a great answer for it. Teams have done and tried some strange things to try to make it work. And when I look at this Boston team, I mean, I think they have the most talent in the East by a lot. I don't think it's very close. And I do think Philadelphia is a good team. And I think Toronto's a good team. And I think when the year's over, I wouldn't be stunned if three of the best teams in the NBA, in our opinion, were Eastern Conference teams. Like, that's certainly something I could see happening. To me, though, Boston is the clear number one out there. And I look at that roster, and it just seems like it's tailor-made for these kinds of things. Now, again, it'll be interesting to see how guys who had inflated roles last year because of injuries, how comfortable they are to step back, how comfortable are the guys like the Gordon Haywards of the world, whose role now is certainly different than it would have been at the start of last season, right? Like, his place on that team and that hierarchy is maybe a little different. I think obviously Jason Tatum's really like late season surge, his playoffs, you know, had a lot to do with that. And I think you want to keep him growing and doing these types of things. So they're going to have to kind of figure that stuff out and figure out what their pecking order is. But they've got a terrific coach. They've got a terrific roster. They have a front office that's willing to tweak and do things. And they've got, like we said, like this amazing chest of assets that if they do need to get off some of these guys and you know, they can build their bench or add a starter quality, you know, they can add an all-star at any minute. Like, there aren't a lot of teams, especially in that upper echelon, who could do that without sacrificing, you know, their best players, really. And that's what separates them, I think, from everybody else.
I think, as much as anything else, it's the biggest challenge of Brad Stevens' coaching career. And he has passed every challenge up until this point with flying colors, you know. Taking over the initial team, a lot of turnover. Rondo was there for a minute. Dealing with all that, he helped them through that, got them to the playoffs, clearly has the complete support of everybody in that locker room. Everybody's bought in to this former mid-major coach from Butler. You know, however you want to rank the coaches in the NBA, Brad Stevens is certainly in top three or four on that list. But now he's dealing with an entirely different thing, something entirely new. To your point, you know, I thought Terry Rozier did a great job of diffusing some of the potential drama at the end of last season when he said, this is Kyrie's team, he's the starter, I'm coming off the bench. But he's also entering a contract year. He's also a guy that wants to get paid. Marcus Morris, to a lesser degree, last year of his contract, he wants to get paid. Jaylen Brown, looking to get that max deal for him at some point down the line. You're going to have guys on that bench that, you know, are going to take steps back, sure, at some point.
Well, and there's reasons like why, like what the Spurs did in San Antonio isn't, you can't replicate
it's
that
hard
everywhere.
To duplicate, yeah,
yeah, right? Because you need the right kind of people to make the right kind of sacrifices at the right kind of time, and you need different alphas to emerge at different times, and that transition has to be really fluid. And I think that's what I'm interested most in seeing with this team is, you know, again, like I mentioned Hayward and Tatum, you know, I think at last year that a lot of times in crunch time, the ball would have been, you know, in Kyrie's hands one, Hayward's hands two. Like, where does Tatum rank in that now? Like, I mean, I think you certainly want him in those situations. I don't think he's a guy that you just flare out to the corner. He's too good, you know? So how do you balance that hierarchy in the situation? These are good problems. These are first world problems. But if you get the answers wrong and you get them wrong repeatedly, like, then maybe all of a sudden, you know, this balance and the harmony that everybody's saying now, and it's media day. It'd be bad if they were like, this is going to be a disaster. You know, that'd be a good.
I'm a starter. I want to play 35 minutes a night. Well, yeah,
pass me.
But they're going to have, they're going to operate, especially early on. I mean, look, Hayward is just a couple of weeks into playing five.
And look,
five.
And who knows how healthy they'll stay either. Yeah. Again, like, you know, Kyrie's a guy that's been hurt before.
You want to rest him on back to backs against teams. Like, there are going to be opportunities. You know, for these guys,
they're like a European soccer team with like tons of stars, like with more than their 11. Right?
I thought like they're like a hockey team. They can play two lines. You just roll lines out there.
You are wearing a Nordique shirt, right?
I am right now wearing a Quebec Nordique shirt. I am. Like, if I'm betting on it, I'm betting it all works out. I mean, Brad's been too good with this team, and there's too many unselfish
guys.
All,
like, what's all works out though? Trip to the finals,
65 wins, and go to the finals. I don't think that's a stretch with this group. And look, you know, I go back to stuff. I've said this a couple of times, and it's hard to kind of quantify because it never happened, but coming out of training camp, and I obviously spent a lot of time around the Celtics, so much of a buzz about what Hayward and Kyrie were going to do together. Like, so much talk about how they played off each other. Like, those two, I remember interviewing Kyrie right before the start of the season, and he could barely contain himself.
Name drop. What a brag.
No, but he could barely contain himself talking about him, like some of the stuff that Brad was designing for Hayward, because Stevens obviously had Hayward at college, so he knows how to maximize certain things that haven't already been maximized coming out of Utah. I really think that Hayward as a facilitator is going to be incredibly good with that group.
Another thing that he does too that I think is like wildly underrated, he's so good at getting the free throw line. And that stuff matters, like especially when you talk about teams that play in close games and you play in games in the playoffs, like having that guy that not just can go get you that basket, can maybe get you those points at the free throw line, and he's better at that than probably anybody else in the Eastern Conference right now. You know, Harden's obviously the king of this. Chris Paul has been very good at it at times in his career. But I look at a guy like Hayward and say, when you add that to what else they're doing, you know, you add that element of their offense where, you know, it's not just be a playmaker, do this, or you know, step out and hit big shots. It's also when these invariably these stretches happen in games where teams go on 8-0 runs, like in some ways that's almost better than like a quick layup, right? As you stop momentum, get to the free throw line, you slow everything down, and he's really good at that. Like, we saw that a lot in Utah, saw it happen in the playoff series against the Clippers, you know, firsthanded, just ending runs by going to the free throw line. And I think that's a little tiny thing that'll help them a lot. It's a great roster. I think obviously Boston fans have a lot to feel good about with this team. I like Philadelphia a lot. I'm going to go see Toronto here, and that's an interesting roster to me too. Kawhi Leonard, if healthy, is the third best player in the NBA. And adding someone of that level to a team that was already pretty good, an organization that's been fairly healthy and has put pieces in the right spots. I think they're a team too, but I don't think anybody else has like the real expectations like Boston does. Like, Kyrie Irving's like the one guy in the East who could say that. And it's not crazy. He can say other crazy stuff.
Yes, which he does.
And has,
and
yes.
And a lot of times. Dan, welcome to the National NBA Beat.
Thanks. When do I get my jacket? Do we have a team jackets?
I believe Woj took them to ESPN with them. I'm not sure.
He's got the box.
He does. I mean, there may be some leftovers at the Yahoo office, but if I get one, I'll hand it over.
Let me know.
Thanks for joining me. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Dan Wojcik for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.